Chapter 34. We did not shoot the dropship as it soared above the top of the atmosphere. Team Zulu did not go into hibernation. We did not jump closer to launch food packages. What did we do? We trusted the awesomeness. That trusting occurred on three levels. For most of the crew who had not actually seen Skippy do anything awesome, their trust was absolute. The beer can was Skippy the Magnificent, was he not? They had read the reports of Valkyrie's previous missions during the glory years of the Merry Band of Pirates that the current crew had missed. They had read reports of Skippy doing totally amazing, impossible things, and the crew knew that some of the most amazing things were not in the reports, which meant that Skippy must be capable of doing mind-blowingly amazing things, and our crisis at Molotan was their big chance to see the legendary beer can in action. The second level of trusting was confined to one person. Colonel Samantha Reed. She had seen Skippy do mind-blowing things, but she had come to suspect that recently the beer can was not quite himself, so while she trusted that Skippy believed all the bullshit he bragged about, she was not 100% convinced he could actually deliver. Then there was me. I knew for certain that Skippy, until very recently, was not who he once was. Also that although he claimed he was now more magnificent than ever, he tended to be overconfident, like, way overconfident. So until I actually saw him do something even close to the type of awesomeness I had become used to, I would be holding my breath for some damn disaster to happen. For certain, if Skippy tried to do something and I heard him grunt his typical surprised, huh, I would be ordering the pilots to jump us the hell out of there. If we could. Which, if Skippy was not 1,000% awesome, would be a bit of a problem. Like a huge effing problem. This, Reed took a breath, will be interesting. Come on, Fireball. I tried to sound way more confident than I felt. This will be fun. Sir, she whispered, the fun part will come later when the mission is over successfully and I have changed out of the uniform I am sweating through right now. If you like, I know of an Elvis jumpsuit you can wear while your uni is being washed. I would rather just stay in this, she pulled at her wrinkled top, for a week. Probably a good idea. Weps, she turned her head to look at the weapon station. Ready in all respects, ma'am, the officer at those controls said, a bit too eagerly. Jankowski, I hope you don't think this is fun. The guy swallowed before answering. Truthfully, ma'am, I have waited my whole career for this moment. Even Reed couldn't help cracking a smile. I appreciate the honesty. You have the maser cannons dialed up to 11? Check. They're good for 3 salvos each before they'll need to cool down. 2 salvos will be sufficient, she said. Then under her breath added to me, or not. Pointing to the main display, I told her, we'll know after we shoot. +8 seconds of flight time. Plus flight time, I agreed. This is just weird, she wrinkled her brow. Firing directed energy weapons from this distance? TTA. She snorted. TTA. I was watching the clock on the display. Now we find out if that code is worth the price we paid. She looked at me in confusion. Code? It's nothing. I waved a hand. Relax, Skippy gave a thumbs up. Our aim will be perfect. The aim isn't what worries me. Reed unclenched her fists, but they were still pressed into her thighs. What I'm concerned about is whether the targets will be there when the beams arrive. Ships move. Warships move unpredictably. 8 seconds is a lot of time in space combat. Our maser beams will be traveling almost 144 million kilometers before they reach the target, or miss.
Eh,
Skippy shrugged. Those Maxalt's ship AIs think their evasive orbital patterns are random, but they are only random-ish.
I hope you're right about that.
Like Joe said, we'll know in less than a minute. The enemy will have no warning, because no one shoots from such a distance. Wow. I just realized. This will be another first for me. Oh! I should compose a song to commemorate the occasion.
You can, I cleared my throat. Write songs again?
Joe, I'm writing a song right now, and it is a classic.
I'm happy for you. Please put your songwriting on hold until this is over.
Fine. Leaning toward Valkyrie's captain, I whispered, don't worry, Skippy has got this.
TTA, she muttered under her breath, and I saw her cross the fingers of her right hand. Weps fire when ready. At the mark, Valkyrie's big maser cannons on the port side spat out a broadside of hellfire. 8 projectors creating high-energy photons that had only one place to go. Out the barrels of the cannons. Each beam was a tightly packed bolt 0.57 centimeters in diameter and 370 meters long, racing along at the speed of light. The beams flew 300,000 kilometers every second. Within 2 seconds, the portside cannons had fired 4 salvos aimed at 2 targets. All beams running straight, hot, and normal, Jankowski reported, as if a bolt of photons could do anything else in the hard vacuum of interplanetary space. It was an old Navy term, and you don't argue with traditions. Pilot, Reed clenched her fists. Punch it. The enemy dropship carrying the canister of radonium was approaching the flag battleship, decelerating to match course and speed. It was still 1,600 kilometers away from its intended destination. At least that's where Bilby estimated the spacecraft was at the time, since we were viewing events with a lag of 8 seconds. The first salvo of maser beams would arrive on target, or miss completely, in 1 second. In space combat, a lot can happen in a second. Valkyrie jumped. We emerged behind the dropship, moving much too fast to catch the thing, and we would miss it by 50 meters. That was good. Just as our sensors recovered from the distortion of the jump, our first salvo of maser beams struck the flag battleship. All 8 beams aimed to intersect on a spot less than a centimeter across. Half a second later, another salvo of 8 maser bolts converged on the weakened spot of the shield, though during that time, the impact of the first salvo had caused the massive battleship to move half a meter. That was okay for us. Skippy, the once again magnificent, had predicted exactly how the huge warship would react to the first salvo, so the second set of beams struck precisely where that ship's energy shields were already weak. In fact, 80% of the maser energy from the second salvo punched right through the degraded shields. Those hellishly energetic photons struck the multiple levels of thick armor plating that covered the battleship's jump capacitors. That's okay. Skippy anticipated that armor would be in the way. Valkyrie could not slow down quickly enough to take the dropship into a docking bay, even if the enemy pilots had decided to cooperate with us. As if. That's also okay. The area above Molotan was saturated by radiated energy in the form of active sensor pulses, overlapping sensor fields, and damping fields that prevented ships from forming a coherent jump wormhole. Even if the battleship near us abruptly shut off its damping field projectors, the residual energy around us would disrupt any attempt we made to jump. That's also... well, you get the idea. Our mighty battleship flew toward a near collision with the dropship as the pilots of that spacecraft wished they had brought a change of underwear. Our closing speed was faster than a bullet, making the timing tricky. 5 things happened within a microsecond of each other. Valkyrie's nose silently zipped past the dropship. Both battleships exploded. Skippy flattened space-time within a bubble 400 meters around us. We jumped, and the dropship got sucked into our jump field. Colonel Frey wondered about the brief and cryptic message from Skippy, a simple, "Watch this," that did not fill her with confidence. Then her connection to Valkyrie was lost as the micro-wormhole was severed. Okay, she thought, the starship had jumped. What does that mean for...
Whoa!
A shout came from the cockpit.
What is it, Kumar?
Colonel!
The pilot turned her head to look back into the dropship's cabin.
I don't know how... but it looks like scratch 2 battleships upstairs.
Frey smiled.
You don't know?
Kumar's brow furrowed.
Those ships are just gone, ma'am. It could have been anything.
Anything? Captain, clearly you are not trusting the awesomeness.
I'm very ashamed of myself. Your orders, Colonel? There are still 6 enemy cruisers over our heads. They could do a lot of damage.
There are 6 enemy cruisers over our heads now. I expect that situation will change soon. For now, we do nothing, except...
Ma'am?
If we are going to watch the show, we should have popcorn.
Spoiler alert. Sadly, the dropship did not survive being pulled into our jump wormhole.
Valkyrie emerged in a chaotic burst of gamma rays, 4 light hours from Olatan, and the dropship came through the event horizon as a shotgun shell, pieces rocketing forward in a spray pattern.
"I like see it," Bilby drawled. "The package is moving away from us at 87,000 clicks per hour. Wow, it picked up a lot of Delta V when it got squirted out of the wormhole. It's going to take, like, a while to chase the thing down, you know."
The display was showing way too much information and not the one thing I wanted to know. "Bilby, is the canister intact?"
"Oh, yeah, man. It's dented, and like I wouldn't try to return it for a refund, but the radonium is all good."
I glanced at Reed, and she nodded. "Launch the ready bird," she ordered. "Skippy, talk to me about the jump drive."
"Hey, it's been better. We were close enough to that battleship that I had to alter the shape of the flattened area I created.
That damping field was fierce. The kitties were not playing around.
Give me 2 minutes. I'm realigning the drive now."
"Ready bird is away," Bilby reported as a new icon appeared in the display. "They are clear and accelerating now."
The ready pilots were pushing their craft at 4 Gs. I'm glad my lazy ass was comfortably aboard a battlecruiser.
"Bilby, are you ready for the big dance?" "Oh, yeah, man. I can't wait to show you my moves. I've been practicing."
"Okay, just remember, there are no points awarded for style. Just get the job done." Skippy finished doing whatever he did to the jump drive, and we jumped again, emerging behind our previous track that was taking us into the heart of the cruiser formation, also taking us into the expanding debris field that used to be a pair of frontline battleships.
"We're good," Bilby announced.
He was interrupted by a loud clang and a sickening screwiest sound that made me instinctively cringe in my chair. What the hell was...
"Whoa! Sorry. That was a chunk of battleship that smacked into us while our shields were reforming.
We lost, a line of sensor domes from the starboard lateral array."
"No problem. I'm adjusting other arrays to provide coverage. It's all good."
The ship shuddered again. That time I didn't need to ask what happened. It was right on the display. We had taken directed energy hits from 2 cruisers. No damage, except that I was annoyed.
"Bilby," I pointed to the icons of 5 cruisers. "Take out the trash, please."
"Rightio, General Dude."
A gravelly voice interrupted.
"Humans, you will stand down your weapons and surrender your ship."
"Wow, man," Bilby responded without waiting for me. "Thanks for the generous offer, but we, like, decline, you know?"
"It is 6 against 1, and this time you do not have the advantage of surprise."
"No, man, I count 5 of you here, not 6. This fight'll be over before your buddy out there even knows what happened. He'll be all like, whoa, that was gnarly."
5 against 1 is...
"It's not 5 against 1 either. Listen," Bilby sighed. "First, I'm going to take out the leader. I'm guessing that's your sorry ass. Then, I'll have to give a beatdown to a couple of overeager wingmen. The last 2 guys, they usually run."
He took a breath.
"So, you want to do this or not? Keep in mind all of us are having to maneuver up here to dodge chunks of what used to be 2 of your fast battleships."
The smart move, the sane, reasonable thing to do would be for the cruiser squadron to jump away, regroup, assess their options, make a plan of attack, or a plan to not attack the human battlecruiser. The hegemony military was smart, but no one ever said they were sane or reasonable. The deck shuddered under my feet as our shields protected us from directed energy weapons from 5 cruisers. Their shooting was precise and well-coordinated, and the beams would likely be followed by railgun darts and then missiles, and none of that mattered.
"Man, that is just rude," Bilby drawled. "We weren't done talking." "Or I guess we were. Okay, I did warn you about this. 1 beat down, coming up."
Despite the bravado of our ship AI, we didn't shoot back. We didn't need to. The Orbital Strategic Defense Network of Molotan was a pathetically understrength joke compared to its designed capacity. Many of the satellites were empty shells. Others contained the proper equipment that simply didn't work. We didn't care about that. We did care that the Boss Farrakh had 11 active X-ray laser satellites. Bilby directed 5 of them to fire, We could save the other six for a rainy day. 5 fusion bombs of 2 gigatons each went boom, and part of their energy was channeled into X-ray lasers. Stuffing a 2 gigaton device into a stealth SD platform was overkill, considering that a mere dozen megatons could deliver substantial damage to a warship of the traditional enemy of the Bosphorok, the Jarraptha, or to the supposed allies and actual hated rivals of the Bosphorok, the Theranin. When wargaming the system, the designers had not used second-tier clients as their opposition. The SD system at Molitan was scaled to kill ships of their asshole patrons, the Maxalks. The designers would have been pleased to see their devices in action. 4 cruisers took direct hits to their jump drive capacitors. And let's just say putting Humpty Dumpty back together would be easy compared to reassembling the high-speed particles those ships became. The 5th cruiser, the squadron command ship, merely suffered a hit that severed all power flow from the aft section of the structure by creating a hole 20 meters across straight through the hull. The edges of the new lateral shortcut glowed white, then yellow, then a dull, angry orange.
Hey, General Dude, Bilby prompted me. If you have anything to say to the Commodore of that squadron, make it quick, okay? The heat from the melted armor plating is soaking into a structural frame that supports that ship's main missile magazine. They have 4 atomic compression warheads stored in there. The trigger devices the kiddies use do not play well with heat.
Good safety tip, thank you. Whatever needs to be said, you handle it.
For reals?
For reals, homeboy. This is your show. The Commodore did not wait for an invitation to speak.
You cheated.
Hey, Bilby drawled. Dude, I totally told you, like, this fight would not be 5 against 1.
You could not beat us in a fair fight.
General Bishop taught me that if you're taking your people into a fair fight, you need a new plan, okay? Like, chill, dude. You have other problems. The warheads in your main magazine are...
The display flared. A 5th cruiser became high-energy particles.
Man, if that guy had shut his pie hole and listened to me, he might be alive now.
I shrugged. I guess we'll never know. I want to broadcast a message to that last cruiser, wherever it is. Ready? This is General Joe Bishop of the United Nations Special Mission Group. As you have seen, we have complete control of the Strategic Defense Network here, so space within 10 light seconds of the planet is now off limits to you. I suggest you live to fight another day and report what happened here to your leadership. To be clear, what happened here is that instead of keeping a dangerous substance away from an entity that is hostile to all of us, you fucking idiots tried to take the exotic material so you could make a deal with our mutual enemy. Now, we have it, and you don't. The SD network here is now on automatic, and your ship is tagged as hostile. If you approach this planet, you will be destroyed without warning. Message ends. Bilby set that to repeat.
Righteous, dude.
Colonel Frey? Here, sir. She responded with a half-second delay due to the distance between us. The situation up there appears to be kinetic. The atmosphere should protect anyone on the ground, but there is a whole lot of radiation up here. We have the package, I said. Well, that was not exactly true. There is no longer any need for stealth. Grab the Chadster and get your teams back up here ASAP. Zulu team will be pleased to know they don't have to sleep in an alien sewer. They don't have to sleep in an alien sewer today, I corrected her. I can't make any promises about tomorrow. Roger that, sir. The original plan for capturing Chad had been to get a star team in place surrounding the campsite, then send in a flying drone to spray a sedative gas. Once all of the happy campers were soundly asleep, and would be for several hours, the stars would stealthily move in using sniffers to locate their target. Leaving the campsite, 2 of the operators would erase the tracks made by the team's mech suit boots and retreat to the landing zone for pickup. The alien campers should have woken up normally, a few with a minor headache, but no reason to suspect anything unusual had occurred, except that one member of their group was missing. The revised plan was a bit different. The drone was launched from the Raven even before that spacecraft engaged its own engines and retracted the balloon it had dangled from. By the time the Raven came to hover over the camp, the drone had confirmed both that all the Bosphorok were unconscious and that Chad was in the inflatable tent on the north side of the fire pit with 2 other sleeping beauties.
We don't need a scent signature for this guy, Lieutenant Kruger grunted, looking at a composite drone image of their quarry.
That big orange streak on his crest feathers is pretty distinctive.
Aliens don't all look the same to you?
Frey smiled.
The Ranan, yes. Not the Bosphorak.
Bring him up here. And keep your faceplate sealed. These birds are fairly stinky.
Kruger was startled.
You're not coming with us, ma'am?
She shrugged, to her own surprise.
Been there, done that. Don't stop to collect any souvenirs.
The gift shop here offers free delivery, so...
He grinned.
Charlie team prepared to descend to the ground, Les Frey, who remained aboard the hovering dropship in case something went wrong, because it too often did. One by one, the operators dropped on flexible nano cables that stretched at a particular rate, bringing their payloads gently to the forest floor. The team fanned out, two operators providing cover in case of nasty surprises, while the other went straight toward Chad's tent, and stopped 10 meters away.
Colonel, I need your input, please, Kruger called. That Lupon pack animal thing, it's standing between us and the tent.
Shit, Frey cursed to herself. Kruger, hold position. Do not shoot the Lupon unless it acts in a clearly hostile manner.
Hold position, affirmed.
Skippy, what do you know about Lupons? Can they be dangerous?
I suppose if you pissed one off, it could kick. They are generally considered to be docile and friendly. That is why dumb tourists are allowed to be around them. Why do you ask?
One of them is standing between my team and our target.
Oh. Oh, I see it now. Huh. It's kind of cute, don't you think?
Frey had to admit the thing did look sort of like a shaggy donkey with mottled gray and brown fur. It might be cute under different circumstances, but right now it is blocking my team from achieving our mission. Do we have any sedative agents that would be effective against it?
Geez, no. Didn't think you would need one. I could fabricate something up here, but...
Waiting that long is not an option. What do you suggest?
Let me think. Got it. Lupons are widely known to enjoy being scratched under their chin and to have their ears rubbed.
I can't... Okay. Thank you. Lieutenant... You are not going to believe what I need you to do.
Later, in the starbase section of Valkyrie, Lieutenant Kruger wrinkled his nose as his suit was removed by the robotic tentacles of the armorer bots. Every part of his suit, every part of Charlie Team's suits, stank of Bosphorak pheromones that made him want to gag. The sickly sweet smell was almost worse than his new nickname, the Donkey Whisperer. Although... Reaching out, he grabbed his left suit glove before the armorer bot could take it away for servicing. Tentatively, he sniffed at the glove fingertips that had scratched the Lupone.
Huh, he grunted.
What?
Frey asked, turning toward him as a bot removed one of her boots.
The only part of my suit that doesn't stink is where I touch that Lupone. It smells like...
He sniffed again.
Cinnamon.
Frey grinned.
The next time we capture a Bosphorak, we need to bring aboard a dozen Lupones to drown out the smell.
She wrinkled her nose.
Maybe 2 dozen.
Captain Skelvanna burned with curiosity, and not a small measure of anxiety, as her ship approached the relay station. The Admiral had apparently already composed the message to his contact, who was not quite a friend, needing only a minute or so to transmit the message and receive a confirmation from the station. The encrypted message was sent. Confirmation was received.
Captain, Scarandum called, you may proceed to the next destination.
Yes, sir.
Did our mighty Valkyrie just destroy 2 frontline Maxulk's battleships with just 4 amazingly long-range salvos of Mesa cannons?
Technically, yes. But our ship had a little help. From a beer can. Skippy had annoyed me by singing I Know Something You Don't Know. I hear that enough from my sons, just before one of them hits the other. So, what did Skippy know? To start, it's important to remember that those 2 Devastator-class battle wagons were the newest type of capital ship produced by the Maxulks, based on painful lessons learned during their bloody civil war. So new that several of their critical major components had still been in the design and testing phase as recently as 6 years ago.
including the critical multiple layers of armor plating around the vulnerable jump drive capacitors. That armor was not just exotic matter, it was reinforced by a structural integrity field. Here's an important pro tip for you. If during testing you discover that each layer of your structural integrity field has a natural resonance that can cause the field to overload and fail, you should tune each field so it can't reach that resonance. An even more important pro tip? Make damned sure that testing data is never available to be hacked by a sketchy beer can. When Valkyrie's big main guns fired broadside, the Mazer cannons were cranked up to 11, but they could temporarily have been set to 12. The power throughput was dialed back just a bit so the beams could pulse at a specific sequence. The first salvo fired at each ship was a blunt instrument, a hammer for punching through the enemy's shields. The tuning of the second salvo varied from the tip to the tail of the bolt of microwave energy set by Skippy to cause fatal resonance in all layers of the structural integrity fields. Skippy was correct. He was back, large and in charge. Those ships never had a chance.